It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And it turns out I was not late to the air after all. I didn't have to speed, I didn't have to do anything of the sort, and managed to get here to the studio in plenty of time. And well, here we are at Titanic Tuesday, the second day of March, 2021. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. I'm trying a bit of an experiment this evening. If my speech is messed with a little bit, it's because I've gone from full-on headphones to little in-ear monitors, and they don't quite sound the same, but I'll get by. But at any rate, welcome to the live version of the program. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. 999 says Brother Deacon, and that means that we are streaming at full force, full strength, full capacity, what have you, on the interweb tubes to both HeadOn.live and WhiteRoseSociety.org. So that's it's a good start is what it is. And of course, if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and it won't be Standard Time for much longer. We got about 12 days of Standard Time left, and then it'll be daylight time. So anyway, those are the 3 hours when the program's live, but most of y'all know that. But I put that out there because from time to time people find the program who have never heard it before and might want to participate when the program's live, etc., etc., etc. But anyway, if you jump into the chat room, you will be immediately greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Oregon Larry and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave and is capably assisted by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve, from Georgistan. So we're all set in the chat room. A great time will be had by all. Consider yourself welcome if you'd like to make your first venture into the chat room, or, you know, come on back by if you haven't been by in a while and you're listening live. It's all lots of fun and Jim Dandy. Yeah, exactly. Lee in New York, standard time to be followed by substandard time. Well, I mean, no, I get so semantically lost sometimes, but anyway, we'll spring forward here. I think around the 14th, is it? She said, looking at her calendar, Sunday, the 14th of March will mark the beginning of daylight savings time and the annual semi-annual observation that of the old saying attributed to an indigenous person that only a white man would think you can cut the end off of one blanket off the end of a blanket, sew it to the other end of the blanket, and think you've got more blanket. Precisely. But that's not what we're here for. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. Thanks going out to our second day of the month subscribers via PayPal. Thank you very kindly. That means thanks go out to To Elizabeth. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you to Rocco. And thanks as well to David. And that's our second of the month subscribers and contributors. So the overnight crew did a little bit, but we still have $170 to finish the challenge that the Bruce's Memorial Challenge that begins them every month. We got $170 to do with that, and then the usual evening's fundraising. So the overall fundraising goal to begin the program, and hopefully we'll knock some of it down, is $470. So if you want to help take that down, the interface, the PayPal interface, is right there at headon.live, and your kind gifts are what make this program possible for everyone who wants to listen to it. There are people who are not able, and they do what they can. Thank you very kindly for sharing your time engaging in the program, and thanks to everybody who makes it possible for this program to go out to anyone who wishes to hear it. I know, you're confused, I'm confused. Billable Rick says, stop it, Jim. You're confusing us with time. I know. Let's see. I had a nice note from Patrick in Germany. There I go. I stopped listening to your program for a couple of years, and when I come back, you're a woman. Wow, quite a huge surprise. I wish you all the best with your new life. Keep fighting. Best wishes from Germany, Patrick. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you very kindly indeed. Things, you know, it's not a static planet. Things change. Things continue. But thank you for the kind wishes. And, of course, Stochastic. Robin! There were a few things that stood out from the CPAC bullshit show this past weekend, and we touched on some of those yesterday, but one that really stood out and bothered me was Trump making a point to call out all of those Republican politicians who didn't fall in line with his agenda. This animal, Trump, once again, degenerate beast, I think that's how Brother Deacon Asa refers to him, once again is employing stochastic terrorism, and don't be surprised if one of these Republican politicians, like my House Representative Anthony Gonzalez, has their property or personal being attacked and assaulted. It just seems inevitable. No one can explain the meaning of stochastic quite like a great big imaginary giraffe. Here comes Jeffrey. Yes, stochastic is when an ass-tick like Trump stokes up his followers, causing them to commit crimes and acts of terrorism. That is a fact about stochastic terrorism. Jeffrey, not quite, Jeffrey. Stochastic derives from an ancient Greek word or words, stochastikos and stochastistai, meaning skillful in aiming and to target a group of people. In this country, previously, anti-abortion religious extremists have utilized this tactic to radicalize others to carry out horrific attacks. Murders, even. Multiple. Bombings and the like. This is all about promoting terrorism, and that is exactly what Trump did on January 6th. He continued this behavior this past weekend with his mob-like behavior at the CPAC convention in calling out specific names of his perceived enemies. Trump's stoking up terrorism has been going on since he walked down the escalator. Well, he didn't even walk. He just stood there because, of course, it had been previously prophesied by The Simpsons. Yeah. And announced he was running for president back in 2015. Trump also incited stochastic terrorism in 2018. He didn't incite so much as he used stochastic terrorism in 2018 when discussing Cesar Sayoc, a diehard Trump supporter who sent mail bombs to CNN and nearly a dozen Democratic figures. What Trump's doing is strategic and methodical and not just some innocent activity. Stand by, please. sometimes calls come through and they have to be taken. Back to stochastic. The incitement of Trump's chumps and chimps, chimpanzees, on the 6th of January was no accident, as he fully intended to stir up the crowd at that rally in attempting to motivate these morons to break into the Capitol, commit capital offenses. I see what you did there. And disrupt the progress of certifying the vote for that day. He may very well have intended to invoke martial law and remain president. Jeffrey has a 30,000-foot view of the plan. So Trump was planning on invoking martial law in order to stop the Martians of the planet populace from taking over. I guess the oxygen's kind of thin up there, isn't it? But when Trump's chimpanzees from the planet of plutocracy busted into the Capitol building, it turned into a scene from Planet of the Apes. Meanwhile, police and the politicians in the Capitol were trying to contact a U.S. Marshal to save them from Trump's martial law maneuver. I'm not sure if the Marshals ever came to the Capitol and enforced the law, but fortunately, the martial attempt of Trump never became law. Upon the arrival of the Mars rover Perseverance on the planet Mars, some natives of Mars viewed the photographs taken from the rover from January 6th and wondered if there was any intelligent life on Earth. The Martians may just send that rover right back to Earth to tell it to look for evolved life first on your own land, on your own planet. And wrapping up, on this day in 1932, the 20th Amendment was invoked, moving the presidential inaugural from March 4th to January 20th, but apparently the maggots that attended CPAC still believe that the inauguration date is on March the 4th. And hence, this Thursday, they believe that Trump will be installed back into the White House via, wait for it, yes, the maggots believe Trump will be installed as the 19th president because of March all law. Oh, the ennui has grasped hold of the llama. This has been Joey's Journal for another Trump-tanic Tuesday, March the 2nd, 2021, with Giraffe on high alert for another million maggot march this Thursday. And we'll get into that in a little bit. The big thing of the day was Christopher Wray's testimony before the Senate today, and it had a lot to do with the attack on the Capitol and attempts to cover for it. And by the way, I apologize. I screwed up yesterday. I'm pretty sure I screwed up because I neglected a central part of each broadcast over the last couple of weeks or so. So let me make sure at the beginning of the program that I don't. This second day of March 2021, I can announce that Rush Limbaugh is still dead and apparently has been buried in a cemetery in north of St. Louis and has not yet been floated down to the Mississippi River on a flood tide of urine. Oh, well, you'll have that. Thank you. Thank you, by the way, to Patrick in Germany, who jumped in and became a new patron via Patreon. Thank you so much, Patrick. It's very, very nice. Very nice to hear from you again. Let's see. Question from Randy Radar. Did Rush Limbaugh die on a Tuesday? It was all so busy. I'm not sure what day of the week he died on, but he is in fact still dead. Of that we are absolutely certain. As for daylight savings time here in about 12 days, David in South Carolina stand says my grandma used to call the current time standard real time. She never considered daylight savings time real. Oh, you remind me of such wonderful times from my youth when my beloved grandmother, as she slid into senile dementia, Alzheimer's or whatever it was, would argue that the adoption of the metric system would cause us to not be able to tell time anymore. Oh, dear God, what am I saying? Now the universe has heard that, and the next thing you know, that'll be the big talking point from the cue balls. Yeah. Oh, and going back to yesterday and the Rico and DeBerg's challenge, some comments, some clarifications. Mainly that, for the record, Rico notes, I did not say, as Flavio claimed, that Honey was a remake of a Jacques Brel song. Instead, it was his early 60s song, Jacques Brel's Le Moribond, which means The Dying One, whose lyrics were later translated into English by Rod McEwen, which then inspired, so to speak, the Terry Jacks song from 1974. In Jacques Brel's original, the dying man was much more bitter about his fate than in the sanitized cover, and it's well worth a listen. Jacks' song could have been good without the poppy, bubblegummy arrangement that made it sound as if the man was almost joyful at the prospect of his impending dirt nap. So there's that. I did, however, forget the absolute worst death song ever in my previous email, an early acidy rock 70s song by Blood Rock. Really? How did I miss that? Called DOA. This cheery little ditty describes a man who's been in a plane crash, his life slowly ebbing away from him, with his girlfriend laying dead next to him. Not sure what ghoul thought this would make a really boffo song, but trust me, it wasn't. If you never heard it, please... Oh, God, it's too late. People are already looking for it. If you never heard it, please don't look it up, as it may give you recurring nightmares, as it did to me when I was a kid, or at least you might get a permanent case of the willies. Okay, so enough about death. I'm concentrating on life for as long as I might have it. Love and kisses. Rico, in the soon-to-be reawakened Berg. And apparently, that god-awful version of the national anthem that we played last night from CPAC, it ruined a lot of evenings. It just did. And... Rico asks, CPAC National Anthem, couldn't they get Enrico Palazzo to do the National Anthem, or was he all tied up? Ba-dum, boom. And please play Leslie Nielsen's National Anthem from The Naked Gun, please. Signed, Rico, wannabe comedy writer, from De Hilarious Berg. I don't know if we can do that this evening, but it's strongly tempting. And wrapping up... Rico says, just a thought. Have you ever thought of doing a paid bonus show like an hour or two a week with comedy content, kind of what you did last Friday with your hilariously funny comment? I know you're stretched and stressed to the max, but I was just thinking how you could further support this your awesome program. I have from time to time, but that, you know, it's not nearly as funny if it's planned. Does that make any sense? I don't know if I can be deliberately funny. Funny just happens. I mean, the funniest moment of Friday night was when Scott in San Diego set his Jesus down a well. And that was, you can't plan that. You just can't. But it is Titanic Tuesday, and we have some examples of Titanic intellect, but there's some breaking news that is probably about the most hopeful that we have had in over a year. A year that saw, a year that saw a half a million Americans die. But it's rather a big deal. After a year of negligence, gross negligence, willful, wanton, and reckless conduct. An announcement from the Biden administration to get our program going this afternoon. President Biden, this is from CBS News, President Biden announced today that the United States will have enough vaccine supply to cover all adults by the end of May. And that's significantly sooner than his previous timeline of July. And it's all made possible because of the emergency use approval of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And it's being shipped across the country right now. It'll take another 40 days to get another massive supply out. But then, who is it? Merck? Merck has been granted the right to also produce the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Johnson & Johnson and Merck have heretofore been big competitors, say, in an old analogy from back in the days of, or the heyday of retail, Macy's and Gimbel's, if you will. So, in a way, that sort of echoes something that I was talking about last week, saying that they should give a gajillion, multi-gajillion dollar contract to, Mylan Pharmaceuticals so that Joe Manchin might actually give a damn about the American people. And more on him in a minute. It won't be good. No. Along with the announcement that every American should be should have a vaccine available to them by May, that's not the same as getting vaccines in arms, of course. Oh, and happy news, I talked to Boss Van Wayne today. And last Thursday, finally, lo and behold, mirabile dictu, Boss Van Wayne, at the tender age of 76, finally got a vaccine in the state of West Virginia. He had to travel some to get it, but he got it. But in addition to the announcement of the greater availability of the vaccine, President Biden also said that he wants states to prioritize vaccinating teachers, child care workers, and school staff through the administration's partnership with pharmacies. He can't force the states to do that, but he's asking very, very nicely. And it is President Biden's hope that everyone in that group will have at least one vaccine injection by the end of March. And he's going to do something nitwit Nero did not do, that is, take the Defense Production Act seriously to ramp up production of equipment and machinery and supplies. Of course, there's still no word as to when we're going to get back to whatever it is that we call normal, pre-pandemic behavior, pre-pandemic life. And President Biden told a reporter who asked him about that very thing that he'd been cautioned against saying anything about that because there's no real hard answer on it. And, of course, other hard answers are still in the they're still in the question phase, if you will, because we still don't know how much immunity these vaccines grant. I mean, we know that among unvaccinated people, there are a lot of people who have had the Rona twice, which kind of speaks to whatever immunity that the body builds up on a natural basis. But it gives hope. I had a note from David in South Carolina, Stan. They have opened phase 1B of the vaccine rollout, and everyone 55 and older has been added to the vaccine lines. David in South Carolina, Stan, noting, I can get vaccinated starting March 8th, or get in line as of March 8th. Still nothing along those lines here, but one can hope, right? And we all know what we know plenty about hope. Going back to Rush Limbaugh for a minute, Clarence says, in the words of Jesse Lee Peterson, he dead. Rush Limbaugh, that is. And keeping up with terrible songs. Oh, yeah, there's that one. Brother Bishop Steve from Georgia Stan says, did we mention that awful tune by Henry Gross, Shannon? It's a hideous piece of work about lamenting a dog that swims too far from the shore and is too stupid to find its way back. Ultimately, you can't do this to me, Steve. Ultimately, the dog ends up, and you have to use your Godfather voice, sleeping with the fishes. Well, if we're going to do that, then we also have to go back to Wildfire, who got lost in a killing frost, because lost and frost rhyme, and lost and blinding snowstorm don't. Rico's got a point. Playing horrible, horrible death ditties could be a lot of fun. Today's birthdays, Flavio lets us know, Wisconsin Senator Ross Feingold and John Bon Jovi share a birthday today. Two very useful human beings who are still usefuling to useless Republicans, chagrin all over. And one of the great political questions of our age is, how in the immortal did Russ Feingold manage to lose to an individual who is quite obviously the most stupid human being ever, ever to occupy a Senate seat? And I don't know. Well, I never should have brought up Macy's and Gimbel's. Lee in New York. For those who do not know about Gimbel Brothers, Macy's is on 6th Avenue between 34th and 35th Streets in New York. Gimbel's was on 6th Avenue between 32nd and 33rd Streets. The building's still there. It is now the Manhattan Mall. I'll be damned. Thank you for that. Thank you for that bit of a little bit of information, Lee. It adds to the it adds to the quantum of my knowledge of my ever so limited knowledge of New York City, and I appreciate it. Well, we're going to get to Thorn in the Side or Titanic Tuesday yet. In my youth, Randy Radar says, I met an old-timer named Gus in rural Vermont. He and his descendants produced really tart reduction called cider jelly. It's a key ingredient in the recipe for making cider donuts, which sound fantastic. He never acknowledged daylight savings time either. The old man Gus would hike up a local mountain each day. One day he didn't come back. They never found his body. In his memory, there is a trail diversion halfway up that mountain called Gus's Lookout, which gives a panoramic view of the valley below. Well, being as how that's a Vermont story, I'll bet you Jeremy in Vermont knows about Gus's Lookout. I just about bet. We'll probably find out somewhere along the way in the program. But I said we would have some Joe Manchin news earlier. You know, here in West Virginia, one has to be careful with one's language. Just a matter of respect. I mean, depending on who you're hanging out with, you can drop the F-bombs, the GDs, and the JFCs and JHCs and you know, maternal copulation words and whatnot. So it was a bit of a surprise to me when I saw this story about apparently Joe is getting a little bit testicly or testy. And so a reporter asked him, because it's getting a little bit stressy for Joe the longer that he holds out in defense of a racist Senate mechanism for making sure that legislation that actually benefits the American people never goes through. So the reporter yesterday yelled a query about when Joe might vote to kill the filibuster, because the vast majority of the American people want the filibuster dead. The vast majority of the American people understand that it is a pernicious piece of crap that is devastating to any idea that we might ever engage in something vaguely resembling democracy. Yeah. And so they said, you know, when might you change your mind? And yelling at the journalist, Joe Manchin replied, never, never. And then, as reported by Bloomberg News's Eric Wasson, he added, Jesus Christ, what don't you understand about never? Now, that Jesus Christ is not going to sit well with the folks down at the all-day, all-night herpetological seminary and Pentecostal snake-handling tabernacle. Probably isn't going to sit well with the Southern Baptists either, but then again, they think Joe Manchin's a Mary worshiper anyway. being he's all Roman Catholic and whatnot. Yeah, probably not going to sit well with even the even the Episcopals, and probably not with the Presbyterians or the Lutherans. And while it is true that sometimes people yell Jesus Christ in church, generally they've been transported in the spirit when they do that. There's an old gag around here that goes back to the Don Nealon football coaching days. Back then, of course, Billy Graham was still alive, and the question went, what do Billy Graham and Don Nealon have in common? And the answer is, they are the only two people who can get 60,000 West Virginians to leap to their feet and yell Jesus Christ. I actually heard Don Nealon tell that on himself one time, bless his heart. But it's absolutely true. So here we sit, held hostage. I want to be fair. We're not just held hostage by Joe Manchin. We're held hostage by Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona. And I'll rely on the knowledge of the Arizona contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation to explain to me what is wrong with her. But Joe's just got his heels dug in because he's got a lot of people barking at him, telling him how desperately he is fucking the American people, because he is. Can't have a $15 minimum wage by 2025 because, well, you know, Joe just can't stomach that. And it's absolutely, well, not shocking, not surprising. But it's awfully damned interesting. We've talked on this program on a number of occasions about how sometimes the Onion, well, the Onion gets so close to reality that you can't tell the difference between the Onion and a real news story. Well, that happened recently. I only saw it yesterday. It was actually datelined February the 24th. Headline at the Onion, Joe Manchin claims West Virginians too deficient in character, grit, to deserve $15 minimum wage. I read the headline and I had to click on it because that could have been the Onion, that could have been Reuters, that could have been Agence France-Presse, that could have been CBS News, NBC News, that could have been CNN. Could have been the New York Times, Washington Post, because it is absolutely true. Instead, the comedians at the Onion have to tell us the truth about Joe Manchin, that the multimillionaires and the people who know which fork to use with the freaking shrimp won't say. Let me get my broadcaster voice on here. Alleging that residents of his home state were just looking for a handout, Senator Joe Manchin claimed Wednesday that West Virginians were too deficient in character and grit to deserve a $15 minimum wage.
Frankly, Mountain Staters have never shown the work ethic or drive necessary to merit $15 an hour, so what makes them think they have any right to that kind of money?
Said Manchin, who added that he hadn't gone to Washington to bring home benefits to constituents who lacked the moral fiber, backbone, and talent required to provide for themselves.
If the people of West Virginia want to earn a living wage, they need to pound the pavement until they get a job that pays one. Look at me. I went out there, found work in the U.S. Senate, and became a multimillionaire, so don't tell me a person can't work his way up.
Manchin went on to observe that the least West Virginians could do is take enough personal responsibility to vote out the legislators in Charleston who set the state minimum wage at a measly $8.75 an hour. Find me anywhere in the text of that that does not smack of reality. No, of course, I don't think Joe would ever say that out loud. But there's something about it that makes you pretty sure that he thinks it. And so we sit here another day, maybe it's time to start another countdown calendar or something, you know, day, what would it be since the 20th of January? So that would be 11, 39, 41. Day 41, America held hostage by Joe Manchin. Because the filibuster is entirely artificial. It's not it's not real. It's to the extent that other things having to do with the business, how the Congress does business, are in the Constitution. The filibuster isn't. It was invented by members of the Senate. I mean, I think they had it at one point in the House too, eons ago, and they got rid of that pretty lickety split. But it has hung on like a tattered old Confederate battle flag with "Heritage, not hate" written across the bottom of it. Never noticed these sovereign citizen assholes have a fit about gold fringe on an American flag, but they never say anything about even flying the Confederate battle flag. It's one of those realities of my existence that every time I leave here and go down to the settlements for provisions and come back, I will be confronted, accosted, offended, disgusted by the Confederate battle flag at least twice. And the irony of that is that this state entered the Union as a Union state. West Virginia became a state explicitly to poke a finger in the eye of old Virginia and those cavaliers and landed gentry in Richmond. Never. What? Jesus Christ, what don't you understand about never? So it seems abundantly clear that the pressure needs to be ramped up. I'm not suggesting anything improper or illegal. But at some point in time, I would not be surprised if, maybe there were some protests outside Joe Manchin's home. Or his houseboat. Does he still live on a houseboat in the Potomac? Or maybe protests outside the Hart Senate office building where his offices are. But protest has also become a more of a dicey proposition. And we'll get to that in a minute, but I want to, let's see, what's that? Arthur says, ironically, Testicles is Joe Manchin's favorite Greek philosopher. No one has had the courage or desire to explain what the snickering is about. Okay. That's quality. And Shrimp Fork, Steve in New York, asks, wait a second, they don't use their hands? You shrimp don't have hands, Steve. I don't think. I could be wrong. Lee in New York says, if Joe Manchin were older, if he were flustered in Bernie's age, he could have said, odds bodkins, and no one would have noticed. He's not that much younger than Bernie. Yeah, Bernie's what, 78, 77? Joe's got to be at least 73, 74. Just got better hair. God, those mansions were blessed with fabulous hair. Oh, well. Lee also pointing out Joe and Kirsten, without them, the Democrats have 48 maximum, filibuster or not. Precisely. So there's no sense in talking about Vice President Kamala Harris putting on her putting on her walking shoes and swanning down to the Capitol to break a 50-50 tie when it ain't going to be a 50-50 tie. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe you do that. Maybe, well, I mean, we're talking about Chuck Schumer now, aren't we? Maybe he schedules a vote on getting rid of the filibuster. And maybe you have that vote
and you make Kyrsten Sinema and you make Joe Manchin align with the goddamn Republicans. Bring them to the foot of the cross and see if they'll yell Jesus. Or if they will sit there and vote with Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. See if they'll vote with treason-committing Josh Hawley, by golly. See if they'll vote with Marsha Gedness Blackburn. Sometimes you just have to do things to let the world see where things stand, what the lay of the land is. And I'm beginning to think this is one of those moments.
Never! Jesus Christ, what don't you understand about never?
Right, wait, where'd all that decorum go, Joe? That's just a reporter. That's not somebody advocating you for you to actually do something decent for the people of West Virginia, the people of the United States. That's a reporter who wanted a question from you, and you get, Jesus Christ, what? Wait, does that mean if you're ever nominated to be a cabinet secretary of some sort, that it'll be okay if people refuse to vote for you because you were crass and uncivil and spoke meanly to somebody, Joe? Huh? Does it? Well?
Jesus Christ, what don't you understand about never?
So the question becomes, and then we can talk about it later. You can call if you want. You can email, what have you. And explain to me why this is the hill that Joe Manchin wants to fight on. Everybody knows he's defending a racist anachronism. Everybody knows that if you defend the filibuster in 2021, you are essentially defending racism. The history of the Senate is replete with examples of good bills going to their death because of the filibuster and the racism behind it. I know I keep beating on it, but how close did the Civil Rights Act of 1964 come to not existing because of the filibuster of Robert Byrd? How long does this have to go on? How long does the Senate of the United States get to make an absolute mockery of any notion of democracy? Understanding, of course, that it is the long-standing position of this community and this program that in the United States, democracy is far more aspirational than operational. But if you'd like to get closer to the operational side of democracy, then the filibuster has to go. Now, there's a... You know I despise both siderism, bullshit dualities, the like. But the reality is, the other side of the coin, and we have to answer this question for ourselves, those of us who want the filibuster gone. There's a possibility, and it was alluded to indirectly, or in parallel, I suppose, tangentially even, during the impeachment trial, when those mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing freaks, the maggots, senators, said, y'all better hope there ain't no Republicans ever control the House and Senate again, cause we're going to impeach everybody. One dickhead, I can't remember which one, maybe it was probably Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, said, we'll impeach Jimmy Carter. My God, even up in his 90s, I would dare those soulless, conscienceless, brainless freaks to do that. Because even in his mid-90s, Jimmy Carter could march into the well of the Senate and make those fuckers wish they never had. Because, of course, remember, they're Christians, those Republicans. The only problem is, Jimmy Carter is far more a Christian than any of those
Christians in the Republican side of the Senate will ever even remotely be. So, are we okay with that? I mean, there is one way to keep that from coming true, and that is to make sure that the Republicans don't ever get control of the House or the Senate or both again. And we're really actually kind of close to that. If we maintain the kind of energy that swept through this country in 2018 and 2020, if we hang on to the House and Senate for just a little while longer, it will eventually become impossible, mathematically impossible, for Republicans to control the Senate. Because, of course, that's the thing you worry about. Okay, how about, a woman's right to choose? Well, without the filibuster, it's going to be a lot easier to get legislation through for a Republican president to sign that legislatively limits a woman's right to choose. I mean, there is a Pandora's box that is in the offing if the filibuster goes away. And everything that can be done legislatively can be undone legislatively. We came within the vote of one cancer-stricken Republican senator from Arizona of having tens of millions of Americans lose their health insurance coverage. You won't have to worry about that with no filibuster. Get my meaning? So I'd be interested to hear your thoughts, read your thoughts, write, tweet, you know, email bobkincaid@gmail.com, tweet, what have you. Let me know your thoughts. Because I'm at a place where I feel like we can't wait for the Republicans to turn into decent human beings, because you're waiting for something that's going to require geological epochs to come and go. The Cretaceous, the Jurassic, etc. Because actual democracy is an enemy to so-called conservatives, to Republicans, because they hate government in the first place. They prove it every day. And so they're not going to... Romney? No. Murkowski? No. Because it's the only way they hold on to power. They may despise Moscow Mitch, but they know that, just as was the case when Amy COVID Barrett and Brat Kavanaugh were rammed down America's collective throat, all they can do if the filibuster goes away is sit and piss and moan as the Democrats in the Senate would go about the business of actually helping the American people. Passing HB1, for instance, that's already out of the House. So it's still an interesting question. It's one of those interesting questions that actually touches upon the ability of Americans to go on living and surviving. Lee, answering the question, filibuster, I would be satisfied with a Mr. Smith goes to Washington, talk till you fall down filibuster. Let him stand up and read Green Eggs and Ham or any of the 6 banned Dr. Seuss books. Theodore Geisel, born March 2nd, 1904. That's another one for Titanic Tuesday. We're going to get rid of 6 Dr. Seuss books because Dr. Seuss drew some really racist shit when he was a student at Dartmouth College back in the 20s.
and there are some nasty racial stereotypes identified in six of his books, which will, according to the foundation or the group that is in charge of publishing Dr. Seuss, those six will never be published again. To Think I Saw It on Mulberry Street is one of them. Another one is On Beyond Zebra. And, yeah, they're pretty creepy. The other side of that coin is, however, the question of what happens when you start banning books. Oh my God, Ferg is singing Styx somewhere in the background. I don't know if you can hear it. Come Sail Away, as a matter of fact, the opening aria that goes with that. I confess I'm not a fan of book banning or book burning. It feels too mid-century German. Hang on a minute. Will you please? I hate to interrupt the program, but even if you can't hear it, it's driving me to distraction. Stand by, please. Well, okay, that was cute. Because I popped my head through the door, looked at Ferg, and said, "Done now?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Would you like to come back and just do it live for the Horn Family Community Congregation?" He said, "You're doing a show?" I said, "Is it Tuesday? Is it between 5 and 8? He said, "Yep." I said, "Doing a show." And he got a really sheepish look on his face and said, "Well, I'm very embarrassed." And he shouldn't be. He's got a lovely voice. He does. I mean, he could have stood 10 feet away and, I mean, probably would have pegged the meters. And he was letting the opening aria to Come Sail Away. Just, oh, he was giving it life. Yeah. Filibusterless Mirka, Stephen, New York, says, "I think it boils down to fear. The Democrats know how bad they are at politics and are afraid of losing elections. So if they get rid of the filibuster after losing an election, what's really awful is that at its core, the Democrats are afraid of democracy. The cure to not letting the GOP do it to us is to actually win elections." Precisely my point. If you don't want the GOP to hurt you, don't let members of the GOP into government. If you don't want the GOP to hurt government, which they hate in the first place, the only way to really do that is to keep them away from government. Obvious, one might think. And there I go thinking again. Oh, and by the way, it is, in fact, it's a Tuesday. That means we have the Green News Report coming from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, Brad and Desi. They always do a fantastic job. We'll go to that here in a little bit. But I think there's opportunity here for a really meaningful discussion, because it's easy to look at something like the filibuster and say, "That's got to go." And I think if you're really committed to democracy, it does. But can we count? When do you suppose,
Alabama is going to send another Democrat to the Senate. We thought it was impossible in 2017, but the Republicans insisted on nominating a kitty creeper. And that put Doug Jones in office. But as quick as they got the opportunity to run a rock-ribbed Republican former hedge fund hustler in the form of Tommy the Tuber, well, by God, they were right back to their old ways. I think there's a chance that Texas flips, but that's not going to happen for another, there's no Texas senator up in 22. There's not another one up until 24, and that's going to be Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, who may by then decide to run for president. How's that for horrifying? Louisiana? Mississippi? Tennistan? Kentuckystan? Somewhere along the way, you've got to break the stranglehold of the GOP on the so-called Solid South, and then maybe we can really, 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 no kidding, get some things done. But not before. So I think Steve did a good job in framing the issue as it stands. So let's see what y'all think. And of course, we are at the end of the first hour of the program, and kind of the end of the Filler Obster. We'll take a little break, and not really take a break. This isn't a break. This is a Green News Report. And in the meantime, y'all can think about what your ideas are relative to the filibuster. Or your ideas about the vaccine. Good news coming from Darlene in Connecticut. So since yesterday, March the 1st, I'm now eligible for the vaccine. Governor Lamont accelerated the timetables, going against CDC recommendations. He and his COVID-19 response team determined that going by age group was best. I did not expect to be eligible for the vaccine until June, so I was surprised to hear this. This change was announced with barely 2 weeks' notice. Suffice to say, since yesterday, I'm mostly unable to access my own medical account to make the appointment. The server's overloaded constantly. When I finally did get in for the first time last night, I managed to get to the stage where I could actually schedule something, only to discover that there were no dates available that I could find for the rest of March. The platform is ridiculously inefficient. I have to select a date and see if there's anything open. It's like a crapshoot. Also, the places for getting the vaccine are suddenly more limited. One in particular that I had hoped to utilize wasn't even listed. And the not-so-user-friendly online process does not save where you stopped. You have to start all over again. I just checked, and the account server is overloaded again. By opening it to 55 and over, the floodgates have also opened, and the system can't handle the influx. I'm now being told not to expect an appointment for another 3 weeks. Because I do not have my van yet, I also must coordinate with the local bus service to bring me. Also, there's pushback because people far younger than me are in dire need of the vaccine due to serious comorbidities and pending cancer surgeries as frontline workers, teachers, etc., and they've lost priority for vaccination. There have been many requests of the government's COVID-19 team to give their spot on the ladder to someone far more in need. Makes me proud to be a Connecticut resident. They've been told no without any reservations. I'm not sure how this will all play out, and ultimately, about the governor's wisdom with this latest move, although he has been doing a terrific job up to this point. And P.S., I criticized Kyrsten Sinema the moment she supported McConnell in keeping that damned filibuster. I'm telling you, there's something wrong with her, and I think it's time for Biden and others to start some serious arm-twisting with her and Manchin. We did not go through hell to put Biden and others in office to be stymied like this. That cannot stand. Republicans would take absolutely no prisoners if they were holding the reins. Precisely. And I don't know enough about Kyrsten Sinema to know what makes her tick. I know a lot more about Joe Manchin. I know he's transactional. And I know that, what, Jesus Christ, what don't you understand about never? That's born of him wanting something. See, he still hasn't brought, like, an FBI center to West Virginia.
He needs something big. And I'm still thinking a contract with Merck, not Merck, Mylan might be that. Because don't think for a minute that his daughter Heather and he aren't making bank. Nothing else makes sense. And this is one of those go to Barber Occam and get shaved kind of things. This is Sherlock Holmes saying, when you have eliminated the impossible, whatever is left, no matter how improbable, is the answer. And all of this comes, and this is just one of those little historical moments. All of this comes on the anniversary, no, not of the birth of Theodore Geisel, but on the anniversary of the Leyland mine disaster. Not far from here. It's in my county. There's a memorial at the drift mouth to the mine. At the time, it was the worst explosion in the 40 years of coal mining in Fayette County. Up to that point, Laurel Creek, Fayette County, Leyland, over 30 miners were blown up and incinerated. It was second only to the Monongah disaster of 1907. The mountains all around here shook at 8:45 a.m. Tuesday, the second day of March. Ultimately, there would be around 200 dead. And it may feel like history, but it still has an immediacy. Because when I, for instance, in our last program, I played the clip of Joe Biden talking about the right to form a union. Well, this was smack dab in the middle of the mine wars here in West Virginia. There was no check system of those who went to work in the mine. And the number of men who were in the mine when it blew up was unknown. And were only possible to be ascertained after the entire mine had been searched thoroughly. And in a mine explosion, that becomes almost impossible to do. From a news report of that time, the bodies of the few recovered were not mangled or badly burned. They were identified as foreigners by the car checks found on their person. Horrifying stories. And of course, the story of West Virginia is a story of blood and wasted lives. Majority of the victims were foreigners, only one colored man being numbered among the dead. That was from the Fayette Tribune of March 4th, 1915. Only one! You wonder if the editor wished the number had been larger. It was that kind of a time. But this is what comes of having been raised by parents who understood what having a union really, 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 really meant from a bygone era. I guess there's no slate fall or white damp or black damp in an Amazon warehouse. But bodies are nonetheless broken there. Have you noticed that Amazon is now running ads? It's kind of like those old Archer Daniels Midland ads. You buy from Amazon because Amazon's who you can buy from.
We don't need Amazon ads talking about, oh, we're really good at flying shit around the world and we get food to people when people need food. Really? Talking to ads now, ad buys all over the place. And, you know, there's no level playing field. It's not like the union can spend the money that, say, they spend, Amazon, over at just one place in particular, MSNBC. I wish they had the kind of money to go head-to-head with them in the for-profit media. But when I see a unionization movement, my mind immediately casts back to the history that I know. The New River and Pocahontas Consolidated Company had five mines at Leyland. The explosion was in number three. And on a daily basis, 175 to 200 men would be in there. But they couldn't be bothered to see how many were going in and coming out. Two-thirds were foreigners, Russians and Italians. The others were country folks from the farms about Springdale, Bacchus, and Crickmer. They were referred to as country people. And not one of them was believed to have survived. The Fayette Tribune wrote, "There were no colored miners employed in the mine, but the destroying force reached out of the black depths and claimed a Negro porter from the store who was standing about 75 yards from the mine mouth, A.B. Cooper and his dog. He was pushing a railroad truck loaded with goods from the store for delivery to some of the houses above the mine. He was directly in front of the blast that shot from the mine mouth." Imagine that. Imagine the force of that explosion. The percussive force extending 75 feet beyond the mine mouth. He was thrown against a telephone pole so hard that it broke the 8-inch telephone pole, which was made of wormy chestnut, which is like iron. It broke it off. He died within an hour of his injuries. So that was what? 106 years ago this morning. There are probably still people here, roundabout, whose great-great-grandfather or great-great-great-grandfather was killed in that blast. And that was 1915, and the mayhem and the murder and the abuse and the slaughter continued. And one of the reasons that the National Labor Relations Act that Joe Biden talked about in his video that we ran yesterday. One of the reasons the National Labor Relations Act came into being was because of the abuses in places like the New River coal fields and Bloody Mingo. Oh, let me see here. 75 yards, not 75 feet, my God. So, 225 feet from the mouth of the mine, the blast extended. Thanks for that correction, Steve in New York. As for the filibuster, Steve also notes, on the other hand, given that the filibuster is eminently Democratic but the Senate is not, might we, by abolishing it, be trying to fit a round peg in a square hole? How can we legitimately bring more democracy to an undemocratic institution that's arranged in an undemocratic way? I see that point. But it's also a matter of a little dose of democracy might lead to a greater amount thereof. You break the filibuster, guess what then becomes possible? Statehood for Puerto Rico. Statehood for D.C., I actually thought about that a little bit, too. We're kind of all over the place this evening, but that's all right. If we talk about Puerto Rico's statehood, shouldn't we maybe come up with a state? You know, the Hawaii consists of an island chain. Why not make it Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands? St. John's. No, not St. John's. St. Croix. Where's Charlotte Amalie? But it would seem fair to wrap all, but maybe not. I don't know. Got significantly different cultures there. Oh yeah, no, he's on the list. Thank you, Jeremy, in Vermont. And so we still have $470 to go to finish fundraising. $170 to finish fundraising for yesterday. $300 for this evening. If we could finish yesterday's and actually finish Bruce's Memorial Challenge, that would be terrific. And it would be massively helpful. So it is worth, I hope, worth considering. So with that having been said, yeah, the U.S. Virgin Islands. Thank you, Ralph. That's what I was thinking of. Now, Randy Radar says, I support statehood for D.C., but I would give them the voting reps that they deserve and the one vote in the Senate that currently the VP has. Now, why would you do that? The vice president is the president of the Senate. You'd have to amend the Constitution to do that. They deserve, the D.C. deserves the same two senatorial and undemocratic votes that Montana gets. Guess what? More people in D.C. than Wyoming, Montana, West Virginia. Right. Let them have their two, they need their two votes like everybody else, just like Puerto Rico would get. If of course, the Puerto Ricans want it. Maybe they don't. Food for thought. So let's check in with Brad and Desi and see what's on their plate this evening, shall we?
It's Tuesday, March 2nd, 2021.
As the bitter cold eases, the big problem now for many remains access to water.
Water crisis persists in Texas and Jackson, Mississippi, 2 weeks after winter storm. Latinos disproportionately exposed to worst water in U.S., new study finds. Plus,
and this is a textbook example of this kind of information and influence campaign in operation.
As cities move to electrify buildings, the natural gas industry is striking back.
All of that news from the Empire and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I don't know about you, Trey, but my car doesn't run off fairy dust.
No, but your political ideology does, Senator Kennedy.
My car doesn't run off unicorn urine.
No, it runs off the same thing your campaigns do. Big oil. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, this storm in the South passed almost 2 weeks ago now, and yet folks are still paying the price for it?
Oh, yes, they are, sadly. As we go to air in Texas, nearly 400,000 people across the state are still under boil water advisories, more than 2 weeks after that extreme winter storm pummeled large swaths of the South. Repairs for burst pipes and water mains are hampered due to a shortage of licensed plumbers and materials across the vast state.
I'd love to pummel large areas of the South at this point.
But getting much less attention is the full-blown water crisis in Jackson, Mississippi. Residents there are entering their third week without water because the city's aging, underfunded water system was not built for such extreme storms. Much of the city has no water at all due to no water pressure, leaving many residents with no clean drinking water to bathe, cook, or even flush toilets. Officials don't know when the water will be restored and have mobilized water tankers to neighborhoods, but the most vulnerable residents can't reach them. The Daily Beast reports that the water outages have disproportionately affected predominantly black areas of the city. Jackson is just one of many municipal water systems around the country that are teetering on the edge of failure due to lack of funding for maintenance and upgrades.
You know, it's also the capital city of Mississippi. You would think they would want to take care of the people who live in their capital, but I guess too many of them are the wrong color.
And according to a new analysis, millions in the United States are drinking water from systems that violate limits for dangerous contaminants or fail to meet federal health standards, and Latinos are disproportionately exposed. That's according to a new analysis of Environmental Protection Agency data conducted by The Guardian of more than 140,000 public water systems across the U.S. The analysis found that counties that are 25% Latino or more violate drinking water contamination standards at twice the rate of predominantly white counties in the country.
Well, they should move.
The Biden administration is preparing another broad stimulus package to fund such long overdue repairs to U.S. infrastructure, but that's after the passage of the COVID relief bill. But Senate Republicans have indicated they will oppose it, like they opposed a similar trillion-dollar infrastructure package just last year. Speaking of COVID, President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID rescue plan passed by the House on Friday with zero Republican votes. It will provide $4.5 billion to the low-income home energy assistance program, which helps families afford utility bills, and it allocates $100 million to address health disparities from pollution and the COVID-19 pandemic. And that's if it passes the Senate.
Well, no wonder Republicans don't want to support it.
In other news, buildings are one of the biggest sources of greenhouse gas emissions that cause dangerous man-made climate change. So Seattle, Washington, in February, joined a growing number of cities updating their building codes to ban polluting natural gas in some new building construction. However, as cities are taking action, the natural gas empire is striking back to maintain its dominance and its profits. The American Gas Association is battling growing attempts by municipalities across the country to electrify buildings, including launching influence campaigns with advertising and payouts to social media stars to promote natural gas, and lobbying state legislatures to pass preemption laws that block cities from banning natural gas.
'Cause freedom and small government and all that.
Scientists say that electrifying buildings and switching away from natural gas reduces indoor air pollution. And the bottom line, it is also one of the most efficient ways to achieve net zero emissions by 2050 to combat climate change, according to Princeton energy researcher Aaron Mayfield here in an interview with NPR.
We cannot continue using natural gas for things like heating and cooking because it's not consistent with reaching a net zero goal.
So there are more big battles ahead as the fossil fuel industry mobilizes to maintain its grip on the country.
And they are very good at maintaining that grip, at least until they can't any longer. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Nicely chosen, I have to say. So we are almost to the halfway point of the program this evening. Turn the monitor back down. And it being Titanic Tuesday and all, this has to be part of it. This probably should have led. We talked a little bit about greater vaccine availability, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So enter the most malignantly stupid governor in the entire United States. And I'm talking, of course, about Greg Abbott of Texas. Both Texas and Mississippi, as led by Colonel Taint Reeves, well, they're fed up with asking people to wear masks to stop the spread of a pandemic.
We're so freaking close to beginning to return to something resembling normal. And, well, Greg Abbott's going to turn the state of Texas into a gigantic super spreader event. And over in Muzlipistan, Colonel Tate Reeves is saying, and I helped at in Lubbock at Montelongo's Mexican restaurant. Greg Abbott declared, it is now time to open Texas 100%. COVID has not suddenly disappeared, but state mandates are no longer needed. Why? Because Texans suddenly figured out how to wear masks? Because I'm pretty sure that's not true. Oy, oy, oy. And then just as soon as Greg Abbott got done, Governor Tate Reeves said, our hospitalizations and case numbers have plummeted, and the vaccine is being rapidly distributed. It is time. The fools. The mad fools. Because this is exactly what the CDC said not to do. I wish I was kidding. But I'm not. Oh, no. The story from The Guardian was dated yesterday. CDC chief warns of potential fourth surge and urges U.S. to keep COVID rules. Well, we ain't going to keep no rules. Well, we want to be ruled by Washington. Won't be ruled by no woman at no CDC. Rochelle Walensky is now the director of the CDC. And she pointed out yesterday that there had been an increase in cases. Not a decrease, an increase. And that the evidence suggested that that might be indication of a fourth surge. Fourth surge of the same virus. And with that fourth surge, she said, at this level of cases with variants spreading, we stand to completely lose the hard-earned ground we've gained. Now is not the time to relax the critical safeguards that we know can stop the spread of COVID-19 in our communities, not when we're so close we have the ability to stop a potential fourth surge of cases in this country. But no, we're not going to do that because Confederacy. You're not the boss of me! And So what Texas made that announcement, Abbott made that announcement, Tate Reeves made that announcement, with Dr. Walensky having already made that statement. It's not like, oh, wait, she said what? Oh, never mind, never mind. It was because she made that statement. Oh, the people of Muzlipia are tired of wearing face diapers. I don't know what to expect next. Is the rule against public nudity going to be repealed so nobody in Mississippi has to wear pants? She was begging, practically begging on Monday, Rochelle Walensky was. I'm really worried about reports that more states are rolling back the exact public health measures we have recommended to protect people from COVID-19. Please hear me clearly. At this level of cases with variants spreading, we stand to completely lose the hard-earned ground we've gained. This fight is far from over, President Biden went on to say. Though we celebrate the news, I urge all Americans, please keep washing your hands, stay socially distanced, wear masks.
And every business in Texas is going to be allowed to reopen 110% effective March 10th, 8 days from now. Now, maybe I'm just a little ray up in sunshine, but I'm guessing the entire state of Texas is not going to be vaccinated between now and March the 10th. So there are 29 million Texans who, at least by operation of governmental fiat, will now be encouraged to become super spreaders. Abbott went on to say, we're now in a totally different position, completely different position than when he started issuing executive orders in March of 2020. We now have vaccines. And the millions of Texans who caught and recovered from COVID, well, they've proven we have the ability to beat this disease. Till it comes back and they get it again. Maybe die of it. I mean, COVID still exists, but it's clear from recoveries from the vaccinations and from the reduced hospitalizations and from the safe practices that Texans are using that state mandates are no longer needed. Jesus Christ. And I'm sure that now that they're doing this, there are mechanisms in place in Texas and Missouri to make sure that when the super spreader event explodes in the fourth surge in Texas and Mississippi, that nobody will be reporting them. Because that's really the key to the whole program. Colonel Tank Reeves said, executive orders that interfered with people's lives were the worst but only possible intervention for much of the last year. Now we're putting our focus toward rapid vaccine distribution. We're getting out of the business of telling people what they can and cannot do. I thought that was the business of government. Does this mean that Mississippi's going to repeal their murder law? How about speeding? Stop signs? Mississippi's going to be a libertarian paradise. None of those oppressive confiscatory traffic tickets. Well, wait a minute, we're going to lose a lot of money on that. We'll tell you how fast you can go. We're just not going to tell you to wear a mask to keep you from killing your granny. Idiots. Fools. And they're not doing this because of any... There's no conflict in the science. They're doing this specifically because Joe Biden is the president of the United States. And has consequently caused them to go into paroxysms of freedom deprivation. So I hope that there will be pushback out of this White House. Because there are things, and this is, well, it's Titanic Tuesday, you know. There are things that are, and I'm trying to bite my tongue. I am. Ow. But there are stories out there, a couple of them that have shown up of late that really bothered me. Oh, that's true. That's true. David in South Carolina, Stan, pointing out, wait a minute. We're going to get out of the business of telling people what to do and not to do? David in South Carolina, Stan, said, right to choose? No government intervention? What about women's right to choose? Death penalty? Anybody? Bueller? Oh, no, we're still going to tell women what to do with their bodies because, we're talking about telling people what to do and not to do. I mean, that don't include the women's. But, no, this story... In the midst of all of this about the possible fourth surge, numbers decline. They've declined, but they're still at the same level in the summer, like we talked about earlier. And I can't, yes, I can wait. But this is one of those jot it down moments. I have an awful feeling that this country may eventually get vaccinated. We're going to run around acting like it's gone. Nobody's going to get it again. And I hope that this new, more competent government is not going to make the tragic mistake of thinking that just because they got one round of vaccines done, that we don't have to. We're going to be getting vaccinated annually. Maybe they'll figure out a way to mix it with the flu vaccine, you know, and still get that Bill Gates liquid barcode in there. Don't think I forgot. I didn't. But I saw a report having to do with COVID-19. And this seems just like a terrible idea. I don't know who came up with this. But it's just bad. The White House Press Corps and the Correspondents Association is not at all happy about this news. The Washington Post reported it a few days ago. As it is now, if you're credentialed to cover the White House, you go in, you get a COVID test, you know, one of those Johnny on the spot COVID tests, and then you sit there and you do your job. Make sense? Yeah? Well, I guess we the people, at least the Biden administration thinks we the people, are tired of paying for the press's COVID-19 tests. So, via the Washington Post's report, as of yesterday, the White House said that they were going to start charging journalists for their coronavirus tests at $170 a pop. Now, if you work for the Washington Post or the New York Times, or and you've got a beat, and your beat is the White House, and you go there every day, it's $170 a day. Every day you're there. And the Washington Post wrote, until now, the cost of testing has been borne by the White House, but officials there contend that the cost of maintaining the testing regime for nearly a year has strained its budget. So it wants to shift the burden onto news organizations. No test, no entry to the White House. I know I frequently criticize the multimillionaire for-profit media and the folks who show up on TV reporting from the White House press briefing room can probably afford the $170, but the question is, should they? Isn't that a way of closing access to the White House to the free press? Because it sure smells like one to me. And the White House Correspondents Association is pissed. Pointing out, among other things, that if you are a small news organization, $170 a day to get your reporter through the door is going to be brutal. It sets up a means test, and I think this is absolutely true. One Correspondents Association member who knew about the proposal said, it sets up a means test for White House coverage. Now, the policy hasn't been formally announced, and maybe this was just something they were running up the flagpole to see who, if anybody would salute, and I think the answer was no. But if you're CNN or one of the other TV networks, you send a crew of about 8 people every day to the White House, you know, reporter, sound, video, social media, etc., under the COVID rules as they exist, it's about 80 people a day that are allowed in the White House briefing room and around the White House on the grounds. Some of these people are outdoor the whole time. They set up camera positions for stand-ups outside the Oval Office on the North Lawn of the White House. I've seen them. Anybody who's been around the White House probably has. But that eight-person crew is $1,360 a day. I mean, let's just engage in a little bit of wild fantasy here for a second. Let's say I got credentialed to cover the White House. It can happen. God, do you remember the bad old days of the Reign of Error when the W administration credentialed a guy named Jeff Gannon, but his real name was Jimmy Guckert, and he had previously, and he was doing white wing loyal Bushy water carrying, but it turned out his previous job had been running a website called Hot Military Studs for You. Remember Jimmy Jeff Ganny Guck? Jeff Gannon, Talon News. It could happen. Well, hell, the balance remaining from yesterday's program, from Bruce's Memorial Challenge, is $170. So we'd never be, if it even became, I'd never be able to go and do this if I was somehow allowed to go and cover the White House, which I really have no desire to do. I couldn't do it because I wouldn't have the $170. And let's see, five times one is five, three, two, $850 for one person to do 5 days at the White House. This is, in short, a terrible idea. I mean, Jesus, the maggots didn't even do this. Now, that's not to say that the for-profit media rides free. They literally do not ride free. When the multimillionaires of the for-profit media and the White House, you know, the ones who are White House correspondents, when they get on Air Force One with the president, they're on the clock and they have to pay the White House for the plane trip. And when they're on pool duty, they pay for their own meals. And they even get billed for temporary office space. The Washington Post makes clear, however, that health and security measures are on the dime of on the White House's dime, our dime. One journalist said nobody asked us to pay a fee to put up the fence, talking about the stupid fencing around the White House that was put up by Nitwit Nero. They backed off a little bit, the Biden White House did, insofar as they said that, well, if you've got proof of an outside test that shows you don't have the Rona today, yeah, we'll accept that. But they didn't make clear what sort of outside test would satisfy them. Some have said, well, okay, what if they get vaccines? Then they don't have to be tested. The reporters. The problem there is that we still don't have adequate science, and this goes back to Governor Greg Genius Abbott. Oh, we've got the vaccine, and we got people that had the Rona, and they're all good to go. Shh. Don't anybody tell Greg Abbott. Actually, everybody tell Greg Abbott. But we still don't know, because there's so much science yet to be done. We still don't know whether vaccinated people can be asymptomatic spreaders. You got it. I mean, who does this? Whose idea was this? Is that the White House press shop's idea?
or is it somebody managing the budgetary issues until we get an Office of Management and Budget Director? I mean, for Christ's sakes, it's financial. So why not roll in perpetual testing into the COVID relief bill? We're going to do budget reconciliation in the Senate anyway. I mean, I guess we're too late now with the having passed the House. But for pity's sakes, it's the White House. There's a strain on the White House budget? Really? It would seem that our country has become more shithole than we even suspected. I don't like stories like this. I don't like reporting on stories like this. But I think we have an obligation when we see a great big giant howling fuck up. Not to say, well, you know, they're certainly doing a fantastic job fucking up. It's a humongous fuck up. Brother Deacon Asa says, do I remember Jeff Gannon? Hell, Gannon's cannon was the talk of the town back in the good old W days. Are you kidding me? Hot military studs for you. Didn't know you were a fan, Brother Deacon. I know the Brother Deacon isn't. Stephen New York says, press corps lab tests. Let's ask ourselves this. If the Trump White House had done this, what would we have said? We would have thrown a fit. We would have pointed to this as further evidence that they're not taking the virus seriously. They're not following the science. And they really don't give a damn about press freedom. That's what we would have said. And you know what? We would have been absolutely correct in all counts. Stop it, Robin, says Lee in New York. Trump could not charge the press for going to the briefing room. They had it closed for over a year. Okay, well, there's that too. Back to Texas for a moment. I will no longer accept blankets from the Confederate Republic of Texas. Somebody should send Greg Abbott back to the lab. A rat like him deserves, Abbott Labs, get it, deserves no less, and Dan Patrick can go with him. May the ghost of Molly Ivins haunt them forever. I learned to write my name in Texas. Two of my third grade teachers were the most loved teachers I ever had. But these two jackasses, in my apology to Britovo's donkey, Jenny, need to stop. They're not governor and lieutenant governor. They're henchmen and lieutenant henchmen. That from our buddy Dave in the blind. Randy Radar says, I see that the colonel never made general, talking about Colonel Tate Reeves. I wonder why. Well, it's an honorific. You know, Kentucky colonels and Arkansas colonels and Mississippi colonels. Because if you start doing generals, they think they're somebody. And besides, there's a constitutional office in each of those places, the attorney general. And that's the person who can, yeah. Regarding whose idea was this, Brother Deacon says, Asa says, did Stephen Miller end up getting a job in the Biden White House? I'm asking for a friend. Yeah. Speaking of asking for a friend, if you watched the Christopher Wray hearing today in the Senate, it was both interesting and powerful. I felt like Christopher Wray did a decent job pushing back against a bunch of Republican horse shit. But one of the most important things that was said was when Christopher Wray pointed out that domestic terrorism is metastasizing, you know, that's what a cancer does, throughout the United States.
We have significantly grown the number of investigations and arrests, Ray said. By the end of 2020, there were about 1,400 such cases, and after January 6th, it ballooned again. Domestic terrorism has been metastasizing around the country for a long time now, and it's not going away anytime soon. Whenever we've had the chance, we've tried to emphasize that this is a top concern. And no matter how serious the topic, a Republican can always make a joke of it. And so, of course, today there was talk about the FBI office in NORFOLK, Virginia. Norfolk. Now, people there, our pal Sailor Chick pointed out, people there say, in that part of Virginia, we don't drink, we don't smoke, Norfolk. But when the issue was brought up, and it was Precious Lindsay's chance to ask a question or two. Precious Lindsay started asking Director Ray about the information coming out of Norfolk. Norfolk. That's N-O-R-F-O-R-K. For anyone preparing for the spelling bee. Norfolk. And I kind of and did a double take or triple and focused my attention on that. And then I realized he was talking about N-O-R-F-O-L-K, Virginia. Norfolk, Hampton Roads, Virginia Beach. Norfolk. And I've observed this going way back into my childhood. All over the South, the more genteel sorts will find a way to say Norfolk, or they'll say Norfolk, sometimes even pronouncing the L, Norfolk, because they're desperately afraid somebody's going to be thinking they're saying that dirty copulation word. This is an indication of the stupidity that afflicts our country. Don't even realize that that's a word that's not an old indigenous word meaning place where we tie up our canoes. Norfolk is a word from merry old England. And I'm pretty sure that the English don't say, I say, old chap, let's go over to the Duke of Norfolk's and have a sherry. Norfolk. But then again, we changed the old English term for a tiny thing, a titbit, to a tidbit. Because we're so hung up in our own puritanical neo-Calvinism that we're afraid that people will think we're talking about breastises if we say titbit. Yeah. Norfolk. But by far, the best comedy of today's hearing, and it was, as noted just now, it was deadly serious. Domestic terrorism is flying through the roof, and it doesn't matter how many questions came from Precious Lindsay or cranky old Chuck Grassley from Iowa. Now, what about, okay, you're talking about these violent domestic, are you talking about the Negroes? It seemed like every Republican was desperate to try to turn the conversation away from the real domestic terror threat that is posed by white supremacists in this country. Your Proud Boys, your Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters, your Oath Keepers and Free Percenters and Sovereign Citizens. My flag ain't got no fringe on it. They didn't want to hear about that because that's their base. Those are the people who keep them in office. Precious Lindsay asked, Director Ray, are you saying that, we still got an international terrorism threat, don't we? And you do think that it's possible they could come over and hook up with some of our domestic terrorists, that's right? Well, I think we got a chance to write you up. I mean, we can get you some more money if you'll just quit talking about how all these goddamn Republicans that are wanting to try to tear down the government. Could you just do that for me now? We'll have ourselves some bipartisanship. Whoo, land sakes, get me a margarita and a Darvon. It was sickening. But like I said, probably the funniest part of it all was when Josh Hawley started asking questions of Director Ray. Are you saying you've got phone calls? Yeah, that's true. We got phone calls. Now, do you just have the phone numbers or do you have the... Oh, no, we got all kinds of data on the phone calls, the people who helped... And he just kept drilling down and getting more and more and more detailed about wanting... Because somebody named Senator Hawley is apparently worried about what the FBI has on him after he helped foment a violent insurrection against the Capitol of the United States. I mean, do you have any phone data there if anybody begins with H? Well, yeah, we do. Now, is it somebody whose name begins? Is it like one of them Icelandic names that's like HR or something like you know, like Beowulf's sword? See, I went to Stanford and I learned things. You got name? You got information on somebody named Hunting? Hmm. Don't have the list right in front. You don't have anybody whose name begins with H-A-W-L-E-Y. Well, I couldn't say for sure there, Senator. I ain't asking for me. I'm asking for a friend. He knows what he did. But that was, all kidding aside, he had some creepy shit to say. And Dick Durbin of Illinois asked some tough questions, but once again, the day went to Sheldon Whitehouse, who asked some of the most piercing questions. It is obvious that he's among the best that we have on that committee. And they didn't go easy on Christopher Wray, nor should they. Not a big fan of the FBI, me. They've got a long history of abuse. They got a recent history of abuse. We have the former director of the FBI to thank, in large part, for the fact that we had to live through the four long nightmare years of the Trump maladministration. Indirectly, because, well, you know, the butterfly that flaps its wing in Peking changes things in, you know, Bratislava. Talking about, of course, Comey, who did as much or more than anybody else to make sure that the election went to Trump. But Sheldon Whitehouse wasn't having any shit at all. And I'm proud of him. And he didn't hide his disdain. Sheldon Whitehouse, as a member of the Senate of the United States, actually wants to do a senator's job as opposed to, say, you know, a Joe Manchin or something.
I do not.
Well, I'll tell you, there were 9 hearings in this committee in which the FBI was a witness, and in seven of them, the committee got exactly zero questions for the record. Seven. Zero questions. Can you explain that?
I cannot.
Better with the questions that we're getting right now? You've been asked questions for the record. Are they going to go into the same, whatever it was, hole where questions for the record go to die at the FBI?
Senator, first thing I would say about questions for the record is that, as you may know, there is an elaborate interagency process that requires that answers that we provide have
to be. Which is immensely convenient for the executive branch. But our questions don't direct that interagency process, do they? And that interagency process doesn't respond to us in Congress, does it?
We're required to comply with the interagency process to provide our responses to questions for the record.
By what?
Now, having said that,
are you required to comply with that interagency process?
I can't cite you the reg or the rule.
Because it seems to me that when the FBI wanted to get information to this committee, particularly when it wanted to get information to Republican members of this committee so they could investigate your investigation of the Trump-Russia connection, that information got right through to our Republican colleagues. It didn't seem to go through any interagency process. It wasn't delayed. What we seem to have is for most of us, but this was bipartisan, by the way. When I say we got zero questions for the record answered from those hearings, I mean zero questions of any member of this committee, not zero Democratic members answered. Okay? So you've got this basic highway for responses to Congress. Let me ask you just a little sidebar. Do you think Congress deserves responses to questions from executive agencies as part of our oversight responsibility?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good. So we're at least over that hurdle. So we've run this rigmarole with the interagency process in which we don't get answers. Some of these go back to 2017, by the way. That's years of not getting our questions answered. And then when it's a question that's suddenly of interest to one party and to President Trump, there seems to be a little side road that gets built around the traffic jam, and stuff just flies right through. So please don't tell me about interagency process when I've been sitting in this committee watching FBI information get straight to this committee without interagency process. What are we going to do about this? Is this a problem?
So, Senator, let me say first, as I said, that I absolutely agree with you that Congress needs answers to its questions. I am frustrated as well at the process. I have added more staff, and my understanding is that when it comes to correspondence, for example, which just doesn't require the same interagency process, that we have significantly reduced the backlog and the turnaround time. But there's no question in my mind.
We had
no question in my mind.
Eight letters go unanswered. The oldest one dated March of 2017.
Ouch.
If you think your process is working, we're not seeing it on our end.
Well, I will commit to you that I will do what I can to improve the process. I am frustrated.
What I can.
As you are.
That's a weasel word.
And we need to get better.
Well, I will commit to you that I'm going to make sure that this gets done. And if it means stopping nominees, if it means doing whatever it takes to get through this problem, we're going to get through this problem. Because it is just plain wrong for the executive branch of government in a separation of powers country to refuse to answer questions of the elected representatives of the legislative branch. It's just wrong. And however many excuses and however much rigmarole the executive branch may set up to slow down those answers, I don't care. That's your executive branch rigmarole. That is not a legitimate answer to a legislator's question. And I got stuff that's now backed up for years. Now, the courts have said that they don't want to intervene in enforcing our subpoenas. I'm not sure we can get subpoenas in a 50-50 committee, but assume we could. The courts have said they don't want to enforce it. So you guys can put our subpoenas in the same file with our letters and our QFRs and not answer them. And then what happens is the courts have said, the way we resolve this is we've got to hit you legislatively. The court said we should hold up appropriations for the FBI and for executive agencies that aren't responsive. That's our tool. Your people do good work, Director Wray. I don't think you want that to be our tool. But you can't be in a situation in which you don't answer our questions, you create rigmarole log jams, and when there's a political interest in getting information out to the committee, suddenly none of that rigmarole pertains. Suddenly, everybody gets their hands on all the information that they need just as soon as they need it. And by the way, I believe on a partisan basis, not shared with both sides of the committee. So before we get to clearing up whatever else we need to get cleared up, all the stuff that's backed up behind our questions, we got to get through the problem of why you're not answering our questions. And we got to clear that up. And I don't know how we clear that up. I think we clear it up, Mr. Chairman, in a bipartisan fashion, because I think both sides should get this. But this business of years going by, of hearings in which zero QFRs get answered, and letters that get thrown off into the don't care to answer that one pile. Woodrow Wilson once said that the oversight function, the investigative function of Congress, is often to be preferred even to its legislative function. We got to get that back, and I'm going to find a way with this committee and with you to clear the backlog. I don't think you think that I should give up on questions because I've been stonewalled for years. If I've asked them and they deserve answers, they should be answered. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. My time is up. We'll leave it at that.
Mr. Chairman, if I just may add, with your indulgence, one point. Senator, I commit to working with you to try to see how we can improve our responsiveness and to getting you more of the information you need. The one thing I will say is that I can assure you that in terms of my responsiveness to this committee, to the members of this committee, or to Congress overall, it is absolutely not, speaking only for myself now, on a partisan basis.
Well, you run an organization that seems to have operated under very different rules. And it was you running that organization. So let's not make these distinctions right now.
Thank you, Senator.
That's going to leave a mark. But everything that Senator Whitehouse said is correct. And I give credit where it's due, I suppose. At least Director Wray didn't say, well, yeah, frankly, I wish he had. I'd loved for us to have been answering all those letters, but Bill Barr, the prosecution, was telling us we couldn't. And I'm supposed to have job security as the director of the FBI, but he's still the fucking boss. I think, frankly, what needs to be done is Wray needs to go. I was thinking about this last night, after the program. We do not have a formal concept of the ancient world's idea of damnatio memoriae, where you institutionally forget that someone ever existed. It's rather a pity, because the last 4 years need to be erased. Every judicial nominee, every judicial confirmation from the Supreme Court down needs to all be cleared out, because it is fruit of the poisonous tree. The nominating process was corrupt. The nominator was corrupt. The majority that approved, confirmed the nominations was corrupt. And everybody who touched or was touched by that within that executive branch needs to go. Christopher Wray needs to, if he does have any integrity, get out. There's a nice, tasty little wingnut welfare job for him somewhere at a think tank or in the private sector or one of those goddamn silk stocking law firms that charges a gajillion dollars an hour. Probably just waiting for him. He could go and go to work for a firm like that and, you know, maybe spend his time putting together plea deals for bloodthirsty monstrosities from the developing world. Wouldn't be the first time. But he needs to go. And, you know, a little bit of strategery. With Senator Whitehouse delivering that Jeremy ad against the way the FBI has been run for the last 5 years, 4 years. If you were Joe Biden, wouldn't you be tempted to give him a call and say, I'd kind of like for you to be my next director of the FBI? That'd be rough. But hearing that line of questioning, and every time he opens his mouth, Senator Whitehouse is prepared and brooks no bullshit. I think how proud our friends in Rhode Island must be to have an actual, serious, working senator. While I'm sitting down here in almost level West by cold Trump Virginia stand, stuck with Joe Manchin and Arch in a bad wig, Shelley Moore. Believe me when I say it's no fun. But speaking of Joe Manchin, he's found his way back into the program again. Sorry. Oh, that's a great, that's worth a cowbell. Arthur, your concerns are important to us and will be ignored in the order they are put in the paper shredder. Signed, FBI. It's about the size of it, because those were, we will make every effort and try to see if we can. There is no try, there is only do. A little bit of Yoda would have gone a long way from Senator Whitehouse. Don't want to hear what you're going to try to do. I want to hear what you're going to do. Don't talk to me about trying. Steve in New York said a few moments ago, I wish Ray had said this. The fascists in Germany weren't flying Black Lives Matter banners. Well, but they did manage to elicit from him a confession of sorts that the FBI is aware of no information whatsoever that the people who attacked the Capitol on January 6th were anything but Trump supporters. Anything but maggots. Anything but racists, white nationalists, oath keepers, sovereign citizens, free percenters, proud boys, boogaloo incel tactical command headquarters, and the like. Putting the lie to things that were actually said by Republican members of the Senate and by Republican members of the House. We will respond to your questions with all deliberate speed. Surprised that didn't get said, Steve in New York. In other words, never. That all deliberate speed thing. And by the way, I'm well into hour three of the Filler Robster this evening. Didn't set it up this way. If you've got something you'd like to say, if you'd like to engage in conversation, well, the Skype line's open. Bob Kincaid Horn, because it's harder to change that than one might think. Bob Kincaid Horn, or the stress line, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And you're mightily welcome to jump into the conversation. And we've got $170 to finish the challenge from yesterday, $300 for today. Sorry to mention it. Sorry. But like I said, Joe Manchin has made his way. Well, the Biden White House has given Joe Manchin his way. And it's kind of disgusting. So we have to do the whole caveat thing all over again, that this is not the Neera Tanden Appreciation Society. She is not nearly, I mean, I don't think she's even interested in being ideologically pure for us. Anti-labor, anti-healthcare for everybody. I mean, just, we know all that. So I don't need to be, I got that. But the White House, the Biden White House has knuckled under to Joe fucking Manchin. Sorry about the F-bombs. But it really pisses me off. A Democrat has chased off a nominee. And this means that the Biden administration has shown that it can be bullied. Because make no mistake, what's coming from Joe Manchin has nothing to do with the fact that Neera Tanden doesn't support health care for everybody when they get sick. This doesn't have anything to do with Neera Tanden being anti-labor. This has to do with the misogynist and the racist and the xenophobe that Joe Manchin is. And I hope I'm wrong. But I'm afraid that I am not. This is the sign of weakness that sends the sharks into a feeding frenzy. Every brown or black woman henceforward, every nominee for that matter, of this administration is now subject to the approval of a member of the United States Senate from West Virginia, whom I am feel pretty comfortable does not have a triple digit IQ. It's embarrassing. And I'm afraid that by the time we get start talking about midterm elections of 2022, the list of things that the Biden administration has been prevented from doing by Joe Manchin, by Kyrsten Sinema, but we're focusing here on Joe Manchin, is going to be long enough that the people who didn't get a pony will pull a 2010 and sit on their hands at home when November rolls around. Please, please, please make me wrong about that. I want to be wrong so badly I can't stand it. But it just galls my gut that a smarmy coal broker from northern West Virginia is being allowed to fuck tens of millions of American citizens, that he is being allowed to exercise what is beginning to smell an awful lot like a white supremacist attitude in regard to any person of color whom he decides he doesn't like. Do you find that infuriating? I do. I mean, I wish I had a senator to be proud of. I don't. I wish I had even one member of the House to be proud of. I don't. Because Joe Manchin's cult of personality Democratic Party has forgotten how to be a force to be reckoned with and instead is nothing but a morbid thing that is a creature for the advancement of the wishes and desires and petty villainies. Joe Manchin. Steve in New York said, if we thought Mitch was obstinate, all bets are now off. Mitch doesn't have to be obstinate. He's got Joe Manchin doing his work for him. It's like Moscow Mitch is a coal boss and Joe's a foreman down the hole. And we all pay. And pay with our lives. You know, I mentioned James Comey earlier. I wonder if James Comey ever sits around and thinks, gee, there are over 500,000 dead Americans because I caved to Rudy Giuliani's threats to use his bully FBI contact bully boys to work me over. Do these people ever think like that? Do they ever engage in the deep searching inventory of their own beings that the rest of us do as a matter of course? Something makes me think the answer is no. And I wish I didn't think that way. I do. I really do. But actions have consequences. Or they don't. Depending on who you are, where you are, how you are, and most importantly, the size of your bank account and your stock portfolio. Now, the Biden administration said they said that Neera Tanden asked that her nomination be withdrawn. Yeah, I feel fairly confident that she was told to ask. Certainly seems that way to me. And they did say, well, you know, she's not going to be the director of the OMB, but she'll have a role here in the White House somewhere. You know, something that doesn't require Joe Manchin's mother, may I? How many other people is he going to fuck? Any guesses? Any names out there? I can't remember the names of the three women at the DOJ who were referenced during the question of Merrick Garland, but they sounded like they weren't particularly, you know, white. And I'd guess that each and every one of their nominations are in jeopardy. Because apparently all a Republican senator has to do is whisper in Joe's greasy little ear, and he'll do their dirty work for them. At least it feels that way. I had a note from Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Josh Hawley questioning the FBI director, but he could very well be part of this investigation because of his behavior, just like Marjorie Taylor Gangrene Cucumber and Nitwit Nero. The FBI director was looking at the perpetrators who were questioning him as if they had lost their goddamn minds. Well, maybe he knew something we don't. That's what passes for hope. Lee in New York says, Joe seems to want to be power-focused. He's more Democratic than his replacement would be. His state will not complain about him not siding with his party. This is his ability to be on any side of any issue. True enough. But really, the only side Joe Manchin is ever on is Joe Manchin's side. Long, long time ago, I learned an important lesson. Taught to me by someone who had been watching Manchins for a very long time. That individual said to me, listen,
No Manchin has ever voted for a Democrat whose name wasn't Manchin. And that extends to the present day. Manchin is for Manchin. Joe Manchin is a member of a party of one. Manchin, party of one. Joe Manchin is a member of a party of one, and the name of that party is the Manchin Party. Thus has it ever been. Thus will it ever be. But it is Titanic Tuesday, and I did mention Marjorie Taylor Gangrene Cucumber. She's horribly upset. Throwing a hissy today on the floor of the House about what? Oppression. Yeah. She even wore a mask because she has to wear a mask. Mean Nancy keeps making her wear a face diaper. But she wore her cross to compensate against the satanic ritual of mask wearing. And so, with her oppression mask on, she said that we really don't have a voter suppression problem in this country. But she, Marjorie Taylor Gangrene Cucumber, the woman who posted a sign that said trust the science, but believes in Jewish space lasers. Just can't forget that, please. No, she knows where the real oppression's coming from. Sure she does.
I'd like to yield 30 seconds to my good friend from Georgia, Ms. Taylor Greene.
Thank you.
And lady from Georgia is recognized for 30 seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Mr. Speaker, I rise in opposition to H.R. 1. While we're talking about voter suppression and long lines, I'd like to point out that there's real voter suppression that happens right here in Congress. Many members of Congress have to stand in long lines to enter the chamber, going through metal detectors, emptying our pockets, and being treated very disrespectfully. So that is real voter suppression, and it's a shame that it happens right here on the House floor. Standing in line to vote is not voter suppression. It's just part of the voting process, just like people stand in line to buy groceries at the grocery store. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I yield back.
You got that? Because she and other maggots like her want to bring firearms onto the floor of the House of Representatives, which, by the way, is against the rules, she has to stand in line to the metal detector. Isn't she just special? I cannot tell you the length of the lines that I have stood in trying to get into the Hart Senate Office Building or the Dirksen Senate Office Building or the Russell Senate Office Building or the Cannon House Office Building or the Longworth House Office Building or the Rayburn House Office Building. Because we'd kind of like to not have people with guns go absolutely apeshit bananas inside the places that we send our elected representatives to do their jobs. What is it that Marjorie Taylor Gangrene Cueball is afraid of in the House? Is she afraid that somebody's going to refer to her as Marjorie Taylor Gangrene Cucumber? That's against the rules. Which most of the people who aren't Marjorie Taylor Gangrene Cucumber don't have any problem following. But she, Marjorie Taylor Gangrene Cueball, she needs her freedom protector. Maybe it's like a binky. Maybe if we'd let her carry it onto the House floor, she'd just suck on the end of it like a pacifier. Yeah, standing in lines at the grocery store, it's just like that. David in South Carolina, Stan, asks, have you ever stood in line for 12 hours to get in the Wiggling Pig? Nope. There's been some pretty ugly lines over at the Kroger lately, but
None of them have ever gone 12 hours. And just as is the case with voter suppression, quite often those lines get long because they don't have enough people operating the damned cash registers. Just like we don't have enough voting machines in places that have majority-minority populations. Curiouser and curiouser, said Alice. Power. Don in Prince George, British Columbia, says that's where real power resides in the U.S. and Canada, in the pocketbook, donor, contributors, self-funding, etc. Until that's fixed, don't expect any better. You left out one thing, Don. You left out the pulpit. You could have all the campaign finance reform in the world, but until you do something about politicking from the pulpit, until the people who claim to have the power over whether one is permanently barbecued for all eternity or gets to sit on a nice frosty cloud and pluck a harp and sing Hosanna, you're going to continue to have problems. It's a fact. Neera Tanden, Stephen, New York, says, let's realize something. The chair of the Office of Management and Budget, while important, is not vital. To use a word I can't stand, the optics of giving up on a mid-level nominee this easily is very bad. Every nominee is vitally important. And what I don't understand, for all the time that he spent playing the power politics of the Senate of the United States and exercised a considerable amount of it, does Joe Biden, as the President of the United States, not understand? I mean, that seems so asshole-ish of me to ask that question. It's a profoundly daunting job being president, especially if you take it seriously. And I take to heart what Steve was talking about earlier, Steve in New York in the past few days, about how easy it is to sit out here and say, well, I should do this, or he should have done that, or he shouldn't have done that, or he shouldn't have done this. But we know that there is a history of people who know how to exercise power and to play power politics. And all I can figure is that somebody is the Biden administration scared of Joe Manchin? Under this bullshit rubric of unity, is the President of the United States unwilling to call him into the Oval Office with all of his... I mean, I've read story after story after story after story about how you think, well, yeah, it's just the Oval Office, it's just a building, it's... But when you are standing there and you are looking at the Resolute desk and there's somebody behind it who knows what the hell they're doing and they say, I want this from you, that it's awfully hard to say no. Well, we know a couple of things. No matter how desperately our country needs it, Joe Biden still supports the ancient racist anachronism we call the filibuster. So Joe Manchin's not going to get called in on the carpet on that. It's all about keeping one's powder dry now, isn't it? You're not going to waste a favor on your OMB director. There's somebody else you can nominate. Okay, fine. And I guess we're not going to waste a presidential demand on making sure that the American people by 2025 can finally earn $15 an hour at a minimum. Not going to do that either. And yes, I realize we are 11:39. We did that a couple of days. You were 41 days into an administration. We're not even at the halfway mark of the first 100 days. So, you know, okay, how about H.R. 1? that Marjorie Taylor Greene Q-tip was inveighing against because she's inconvenienced by having to take her by not being able to bring her fucking arsenal into the House. Voting rights. Things that would correct problems and make it possible to render. I mean, the reason the Republicans hate that bill is because they know what it will fucking do to them. It will end them. Because if people who want to vote can vote, Republican majorities will become something you talk about in polite cocktail conversation at the same time you're talking about the demise of the dinosaurs. Did I almost say Democrats? Oopsie. Dr. Freud. So I don't know. I'm just wondering what the what the powder's staying dry for, because I mean it seems to me the powder's staying right. Lee in New York, Marjorie Taylor Greene, she wants her gun on the House floor to send a round through legislation as her way to cast a no vote. Oh, that means she wants to shoot a bill, just like Joe Manchin did. Again, Marjorie Taylor Gangrene Cucumber. Steve in New York says, I think Professor Spicoli, peace be upon him, has a perfect insight for Marjorie Taylor Green Q-tip.
You dick!
Or maybe, that'll work. That's plenty. That's not a gender exclusive term. Not in that circumstance. Religion, Don in Prince George, British Columbia says you're absolutely right, but rules and regulations control that interference. Meaning religion, the pulpit. Those rules and regs just need to be enforced with a will. Yeah, they do. And the howling and the shrieking and the screaming, oh my God. Be able to hear it on Elon Musk's secret summer home on Mars. Grocery stores. Jeremy in Vermont says, I've been in more than a few grocery lines and I've seen a hog nose hanging off some redneck wimp and wondered when the correct time to tackle or throw something at this freak when the freak freaks out at a wrong statement and decides it's meat and Jesus time for people around him. So, no, it's not the same thing, gangrene. You fuckwad. No, it's not. Yeah. Hog leg. Matt in San Francisco says, I hate Joe. This week I've arrived at really hating Joe Manchin. He's going to ensure this country slides into fascism. Who needs Republicans when fellow Democrats can screw you over from inside the tent? And that is damned well what it feels like, Matt. And yet, you know, another one of those great philosophical moments occurs when you talk about Joe Manchin.
Politicians, ugly buildings, and whores all get respectable if they last long enough.
Why are you doing it? How much better can you eat? What can you buy that you can't already afford?
Well, he's got seven generations of mansions in the future to take care of, I guess. Subject line, the Senate. Steve in New York says, Joe's a creature of the Senate of yore, Joe Biden. That Senate's gone, and I think he's learned some of the lessons from the obstruction from the Obama years. There's a part of him that thinks he can be the one who makes the fever break. He's operating on nostalgia and not reality. Living in the past. Cue up Jethro Tull, right? Never mind. Ralphs asks, does Marjorie Taylor Greene want to rewrite the I'm Just a Bill song? I'm just a gun. I'm having some fun. But I can't go into the House of Representatives. No, doesn't scan, does it? Makes a hell of a lot of sense, though. It's Titanic Tuesday for a reason. And there is another story out there that Matt reminded me of earlier. Talking about Sheldon Whitehouse a moment ago and how proud one must be to have him for a senator. Darlene says, and proud from Rhode Island's sister state of Connecticut. Ray did drop a massive hint there. Don't forget the Justice Department's organizational chart. Ray is way, way low on the chain of command. Don't forget. Yes, essentially, Pepe the Frog Barr ordered him not to respond. Barr said that the buck stops with him, right? True. If it was a director, Robert Mueller, he would have resigned. I'm not sure what Ray's ultimate game is, but I do think he's a good man trying to stay as apolitical as possible and trying to walk these awfully fine lines without falling off into the abyss. He managed to survive Trump and not get fired by choosing his battles. Ultimately, I don't know why. Maybe he just loves being FBI director. Well, you know, he's a Harvard law guy. I saw a post on Facebook earlier today from Mark Levine. He used to do a program on this network, oh, so many years ago. And Mark is a member of the Virginia House of Delegates, and he was talking about how back nearly some 30 years ago now, he and Chris Coons and Christopher Wray used to just sit around chewing the fat there up at Harvard Law. And Mark did remark on the integrity and patriotism of both guys. But Darlene says maybe he just loves being FBI director, but as such, more questions need to be leveled at him, such as why the totally non-investigative approach of the FBI to Brett Kavanaugh? At DiFi's request, no less, and she sits on that committee. Lord knows if she'll even remember or even care to ask, but these questions must be leveled at him and Barr. He needs to have his ass hauled before those committees, too. I don't think he or Don McGahn or any of them should be able to sleep well at night. They should never be considered off the hook. Hey, you buy the ticket, you take the ride. And some of us are not mollified by weasel words like, well, we're going to try. Jesus, it's a shame. It really is. It's a shame that Sheldon Whitehouse has so much dignity that he couldn't drop into a good Yoda and say, there is no try, only do. Would have been perfect in that moment, you got to admit. I would be remiss, however, if I did not bring in Josh Hawley's questioning for a friend. This is just rich.
Are you saying that you don't know whether or not the Bureau has scooped up geolocation data, metadata from cell phone records from cell phone towers? Or do you not know, or are you saying that the Bureau maybe or maybe hasn't done it? Just tell me what you know about this.
So when it comes to geolocation data specifically, again, not in a specific instance, but just even the use of geolocation data, I would not be surprised to learn, but I do not know for a fact, that we were using geolocation data under any situation with connection with the investigation of the 6th. But again, we do use geolocation data under specific authorities in specific instances. Because this is such a sprawling investigation, that would not surprise me. When it comes to metadata, which is a little bit different, obviously, than geolocation data, I feel confident that we are using various legal authorities to look at metadata under a variety of situations. But again, the specifics of when, under what circumstances, with whom, that kind of thing, I'm not in a position to testify about with the sprawl and size of the investigation, and certainly not in a congressional hearing.
Rational answer. But it's the question that was bullshit. Former FBI Special Agent Clint Watts said that in an interview that the way that Hawley phrased the question was deeply misleading. He said all investigations involve the pursuit of records, including banking and communications records. This is straight disinformation strategy, yet these same legislators will be whining when FBI doesn't preemptively stop a terrorist attack or a crime. Maybe Clint Watts couldn't say the obvious thing that, as I mentioned a little bit ago, Josh Hawley was fishing, trying to figure out just how much crap they have on him. Because just because you're a senator, well, we spent 4 years being hammered over the head with the idea that the president of the United States is above the law. But senators have gone down. So have members of the House. And if Josh Hawley even came within 100 yards of violating a federal statute, I, for one, would like to see him charged and tried. But it certainly seemed to me that he was a mite nervous. Yeah. By the way, we've finally gotten off the schneid after 2 hours and 41 minutes. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont, with a note. Come on, Horn family. Don't let this challenge go unanswered. So there's $160 left on it now. Thank you, Jeremy. I cannot thank you enough. That's 16 people at $10 or 10 people at $16. It's not doable. And since it is Titanic Tuesday, well, I had the story about the White House press office, about them wanting to charge the press for their COVID tests, and that's stupid. But I still got to give credit where credit's due. Jen Psaki apparently spends a significant portion of her day getting ready for or anticipating whatever degree of stupidity is going to come burbling out of the mouth of a correspondent for Fox News TV Radio Rwanda or Newsmuck or Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground. Oh, and by the way, Hawley's question, Steve in New York says he's scared shitless that his cell data is in the FBI's possession. That's the way I read it. And Matt in San Francisco says, I would have given money. I'd have paid a dollar if the FBI director would have answered, Mr. Hawley, we have your number. That, oh, I'd have joined you with that dollar. Oh, yeah. But I mentioned the Dr. Seuss thing earlier, about which the White House has precisely nothing to do. There's no official Office of Children's Book Censorship in the White House. But nonetheless, you know, if you work for Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, you're not sent there to get actual news. You're sent there to gin up crap that'll get Emery and Marvelline plenty rot sitting there in their matching Barca loungers down at the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Court and Country Club. And all day long over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, it's been nonstop. They're canceling Dr. Seuss, which is of course, a million miles from anything resembling truth or fact. Back to Hawley and Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. Darlene says, I think, Hawley and I think Cruz were both fishing, or should I say P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, fishing, to find out what the FBI might know and laying the groundwork to try to stop that info from coming out. Metadata's been around a long time at the FBI, and anything suspicious can be FISA'd to get the contents of those calls. And wouldn't you like to? You know he was calling. And don't forget Mike Lee and Tommy the Tuber. That still, I still think about their response to that, because that was knee-jerk. That was the kind of shit where you should have kept your mouth shut, but you didn't. And thank you to our dear friend Jude. We are now down. We're now down to 150 to go to finish yesterday's challenge. It'll pretty much wrap up this evening. Hit or miss. All or nothing. Thank you. Thank you, Jude. As to Dr. Seuss, David in South Carolina, Stan, with a note, a tweet from Charlotte Clymer. Given the clear evidence that Dr. Seuss's kids' books still used racist depictions, even if they're not obvious to white people like me, maybe continuing to tout them as the gold standard of anti-racism in early childhood education isn't the best way to go here? So Loudoun County Public Schools kept the books, still display them, still allow kids to check them out, but simply don't want to hold them up as the central gateway to childhood literacy because of demonstrable racist depictions. That's different from setting fire to them or banning them outright. What the foundation that is in charge of publishing Theodore Geisel's work said is that there are six books on Beyond Zebra, and To Think I Saw It on Mulberry Street, four others, that they're not going to publish anymore because there's stuff in there that really just is, you can't argue that it ain't. But on the other hand, who does ban books? David in South Carolina, Stan, pointing out further from Charlotte Clymer, that seems pretty damn reasonable, but wait, I've heard that schools do ban books, those filthy liberals with their cancel culture. So I went to the Google to look up a list of the most banned books last year, because that's a thing anyone with internet can do, and I found out that for the most recent year for which we have data, 2019, of the 10 books most challenged and banned, 8 of them were solely because of LGBTQ themes. It seems social conservatives have worked overtime to cancel LGBTQ books. Oh, and one of the, I think it's in that letters of note, if you look it up on the web, there's a letter from Kurt Vonnegut to a school board in South Dakota or somewhere that decided that Kurt Vonnegut was too dirty for high school students to read because of, and wait for it, Slaughterhouse-Five. A book about the nightmare horrors of living through World War II and having been a prisoner of war, held in captivity by the Third Reich, and watching Dresden burn. But it contained a character described as being of fabulous beauty, named Montana Wild Hack. And it contained several objectionable words that, my God, children in South Dakota had probably never heard until Slaughterhouse-Five made it into the high school. Kurt Vonnegut spared no opprobrium when he wrote his letter. It's worth looking up. Wow. Thank you, Charlene. Charlene in Rogues Island just took us down to only $50 to go to finish yesterday's challenge. Charlene, I can't thank you enough. Thank you so very much. Thank you. So we got 12 minutes, 50 more bucks. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you, Jeremy, and thank you, Jude. Let me just get to the Jen Psaki business with the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Hissy over Dr. Seuss.
It is National Read Across America Day. It's also Dr. Seuss's birthday. Mm-hmm. Both former Presidents Obama and Trump mentioned Dr. Seuss in their Read Across America Day proclamations, but President Biden did not. Why not?
Well, first, the proclamation was written by the Department of Education, and you could certainly speak to them about more specifics about the drafting of it, but Read Across America Day, which, as you're right, has not existed forever, has only been around for a short period of time, elevates and celebrates a love of reading among our nation's youngest leaders. And the day is also a chance to celebrate diverse authors whose work and lived experience reflect the diversity of our country. And that's certainly what they attempted to do or hope to do this year. And as we celebrate the love of reading and uplift diverse and representative authors, it is especially important that we ensure all children can see themselves represented and celebrated in the books that they read.
So does the omission have anything to do with the controversy about the lack of diverse characters in the author's books?
Well, again,
that's not the concern.
It is important that children of all backgrounds see themselves in the children's books that they read. But I would point you to the Department of Education for any more details on the writing of the proclamation. Go ahead.
Damn, she's good. At least when she's dealing with an idiot from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, she's good. That's... Oh. You can't ask any better. Except if you wanted to see her come down and grab the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda asshole and, you know, shake her a little bit and say, how stupid are you?
Was it because of lack of diversity?
Because, see, when you say lack of diversity over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda viewers all, almost in unison, start screaming that word and emailing that word back to Fox, because that's the essential demographic of the average, ordinary Fox News TV Radio Rwanda viewer. It just is. And guess who has a new job? You knew she'd land on her paws somewhere. And she did. Because there's always a wingnut welfare job out there for you somewhere. If you are a loyal maggot or a loyal bushy or the like. Former White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany has a brand new job at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Everybody over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda apparently isn't so happy about that, though, because an unnamed insider there, speaking on condition of anonymity to the Daily Beast, said, it's truly disgusting. They fire hardworking journalists who did care about facts and news reporting, only to turn around and hire a mini Goebbels. Ow! Whose incessant lies from the White House helped incite an insurrection on our democracy that got 5 people killed, including a police officer. Post-Trump Fox is quickly becoming a very scary place and quite dangerous for our democracy. It's not even conservative news anymore. They've plunged into an alternate reality where extremist propaganda is the only course on the menu. It was also described, the hiring, as upsetting. So many good people are out of a job now, and I'm sure she'll get a huge contract. That was another staffer. Another one said, it bothers me then that it's basically a slap in the face to the hardworking journalists that value real news and facts, but it also doesn't surprise me because they've shown that they don't give a damn about facts and real news. Wait, how long have you worked there? When did they ever? I mean, what, the one-hour block that Shepard Smith used to host? That's been a while. She was, a staffer said, hired on name recognition, notoriety, and obvious willingness to say anything her employer desires. And the viewers are morons. Now, this was published at the Daily Beast, and don't think for a minute that the suits at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda don't read it. And so there'll probably be some digging around trying to find out who said it, and somebody else, well, we can just use their salary to help pay Kayleigh McEnany's. Jesus. Oh, and hey, some good news. Good news. Thank you so much. We will finish off the evening with Matt in San Francisco's $25, call it the one day I hope to live in a civilized country challenge. $25. And that will finish off the challenge for Monday, and we'll be fully funded for Monday, and that'll be freaking awesome. Thank you, Matt. So hopefully there's another $25 bouncing around out there in the next few minutes. Oh, and Steve in New York says, not land on her paws, land on her hooves, her cloven hooves. Get it right, Robin. Sorry. We regret the error. Okay. Oh, okay. So make it 10. There's $10 to go. Thank you, Steve in New York. Thank you so kindly. Steve is going to get his first round of the Moderna vaccine tomorrow. And I'm so excited. 3:30 tomorrow afternoon. First dose of Moderna for Steve in New York. I could not be happier for you, my friend. So there we are. $10 to go, and we're finished with Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Thank you so much. And, just to keep this from being a complete filler robster, let's go over and check in with our buddy Rick, who isn't billable, who is from Asgard. Hey, Rick.
How are you?
Okay-ish. Nothing to complain about. It was a beautiful day here today. Got up almost to 50. Not terribly windy.
Nice.
Yeah, it was nice being. Oh, it was just gorgeous. Bluebird day, and we're going to have another. We're going to have another one tomorrow, and I get all the way up to 55. I'm stoked.
Oh, nice.
I'm going to go. I'm going to go for a hike.
Greetings from Spock.
Live long and prosper, Spock.
I looked into that game you were talking about the other day, Fallout 76.
Yeah.
And I'm really loving it, and I've been playing it. It's actually quite good.
Wonderful. Well, oh, there's my neck of the woods is in that game.
Oh, okay.
So when you get to wherever it is in the game where you're looking up at a huge arch bridge over a really deep gorge.
Oh yeah, I've fallen off of that already.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Okay. Well, that's about 5 miles from me.
Yeah, I pissed off one of these big green mutant things in here and it punted me off the bridge.
Fly, you fools. Oh, it wasn't a Balrog.
Yeah, it looks similar. Game's really interesting. Thank you for turning me on to that.
I'm glad you're enjoying it.
One thing I'm really I've been wanting it. I called in on Sunday to John Britovo's show about this, but 3 days before that, one of the politicians here in Illinois, up in Chicago, is trying to ban Grand Theft Auto and violent video games. And the way he worded it would make Pong be classified as a violent video game.
Pong?
Yeah.
Boop. Boop. That Pong?
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
Basically, any video game where you can recognize a human figure and it causes any kind of anxiety in any way, shape, or form to any other character, it would be banned by this. And he's specifically going after Grand Theft Auto, which has been out for 8 years.
Jesus. The never dull moment.
And he's a Democrat. Why can't we stop snatching defeat from the jaws of victory?
No, you're asking one of those eternal questions. I mean, you come up with that one. There, you got a huge future in political consulting.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, it's like the entire party had a radical splenectomy sometime around 1979.
Well, way, way back in the early aughts, the late great Bart Kopp, whom you know, someday when you're just bored, go and look up Bart's old pages. It's like time travel. He's hilarious. And he's delightful. And biting wit and no bullshit. There was an old, he used to post it from time to time, a bunch of donkeys standing around, and there's a human spine. Donkeys, of course, Democrats. And there's a human spine, and the donkeys are looking at each other, horrified, saying, oh my God, what is it?
Yeah, we really can't avoid creating a circular firing squad, can we?
I freely admit that there's probably things working in the background that I just, it's above my pay grade, and I don't know why they would do what they do. But some of these things are absolutely inexplicable to somebody like me, who has actually paid attention to politics for a very long time.
I mean, I've studied psychology, and this completely baffles me.
Okay, so it's not just me.
No. Like, it's antithetical to everything you would think would make it for a functioning society. It's a bunch of geriatric people arguing in each other.
Well, remember, I mean, where the Senate is concerned, Rick, you have to take into account the meaning of the word.
Yeah, well, it meant old, basically.
Well, Senate elders. Comes from the Latin word senex, which means old, which means it's a gathering. In ancient Rome, it was a gathering of, it started out as a gathering of the old people who ran the Republic. There's an analog in Greek called gerousia. And again, we get the word geriatric from that. And again, the gerousia was a gathering of the old men who ran things.
Yeah, one thing I'm convinced we should do is, instead of putting a term limit on people in Congress, put an earnings cap. If you make above a certain amount, you can't serve because you're so removed from the events of the basic foundation of society. You can't make a rule and measure judgment about how to basically make financial policy.
That's actually not a terrible idea. But I'm so proud that you didn't say we need term limits, because that's such a horrible, horrible idea.
It gets rid of the institutional memory of the
precisely
of our government,
and it also does away with any idea of democracy. Because if you can't
swoop in and starts buying up and snatching up senators, and then just becomes a plutocracy.
It's real easy to say, ooh, I want term limits, if you're talking about, say, a Richard Shelby from Alabama or, you know, a Chuck Grassley from Iowa. But if you turn around and you say, oh, okay, how about Bernie? Oh, well, not for Bernie.
The Senate itself should be restructured to be actually larger than the House of Representatives, because the larger the body it is, the harder it is to corrupt, because the more cogs you have to control within the situation in order to make it do what you want, and the more likely one of them is just going to say fuck it and go rogue.
Possibly, yeah.
And so rather than getting rid of senators, just start packing the Senate.
Look what happens if we afford statehood to Puerto Rico and D.C.
Yeah.
Suddenly Joe Manchin doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. And
frankly, Kyrsten Sinema doesn't either.
Yeah. Make it to where that every single state that is already in the United States, instead of getting two senators, now gets eight.
No. Now you're talking about amending the Constitution or an Article 5 convention, both of which are, one is damn near impossible, and the other is a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, that's just...
Because there are some people on our side of the aisle who still have it in their tiny little noggins that it would be a fine, fine thing to have an Article 5 convention and just let the people, let all the maggots from the maggot states whip our ass, throw us out of the convention, and make their own rules and write their own new constitution, which we would not enjoy.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how difficult it is to explain that.
It wouldn't end very well for the proletariat.
Yeah. Especially the women proletariat and the LGBTQ plus proletariat and the anybody but white proletariat. Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm glad you called in, Rick. We will hopefully have more time next time. I'm gonna roll off here and get this thing uploaded.
Sorry if I called in too late.
No, you didn't call in. I mean, just, you know, time's somewhat limited.
Yeah,
We'll talk more later.
Fallout. And
I was going to say, and I don't want to take you away from Fallout 76. I want you to fully enjoy that. Go whip that green thing's ass and own the New River Gorge Bridge.
Oh, I did. I found a mini nuke launcher.
Those are so handy sometimes. Rick, take care, my friend.
You too.
All right. Bye now.
Bye now.
Our buddy Rick the Norseman wrapping things up here. Hey, hallelujah. We are done. We got an anonymous $10 in at the very end, and we are done with the with Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Again, thanks to everybody who contributed to it. Thank you so very much indeed. And so we'll be back tomorrow, and oh my heavenly days, if they've opened up in Texas, does that mean we get to open up the Cathedral of Common Sense again and start inviting people? Because, I mean, we could make the cathedral be in Texas if we do. Or hey, Mississippi. Oh, Jesus. Thanks, everybody, for keeping this program on the air. Thank you so very much indeed. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers who, with your partial sponsorships, help keep the program on the air. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. You are all why this program continues to exist. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Keep at it. Keep the best attitude you can maintain and keep healing, my friend. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Hopefully, we'll all be getting our distemper shots sooner than we thought. I certainly hope so. But until then, we still have to maintain our social distance. We still have to wear our masks, and we'll be wearing masks even after we get our shots. We have to keep washing our hands. We have to avoid touching our face. We have to use our hand sanitizer. We have to be smart. We have to be smarter than the maggots are because, well, they're trying to kill us. And so with all that being said, maintain your social distance, 15 feet between people wearing masks. If people aren't wearing masks, you don't want to be near them. And for heaven's sakes, if somebody comes towards you saying, does the FBI have metadata on anybody from Missouri named Holly? I mean, I'm just asking. Avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Later.